information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Don't believe these stray dog broadcasters. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 207 from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, Solid Curtain, Terror Drills, and Meet the Mossad Mayor, Coke Prank, Picket Lines, and Left-Right Paradigms, Libyan Turmoil, Grease Fires, and Geopolitical Liars, Timelines, Lullabies, and Sonic Path Reincarnation, plus the Zombie Pope, End Time, Solar Flares, and You. All that, so much more. February 25th, 2011. This is episode 207 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Just
strange new music for strange new times, ladies and gentlemen. That's the one and only Radiohead with a track called Feral from their brand new record, The King of Limbs, which came from seemingly out of nowhere last Friday. And that's the kind of strange new times we are in. And it's February 25th, 2011. This is episode 207 from Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And, of course, a huge thanks to all our affiliates who broadcast and rebroadcast and syndicate this show and all that it has to offer. But the biggest thanks goes to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net, simulcasting this show live as we speak. We're in the chat room over on ZeroPointRadio.com, and as we'll say for all the independent, truly non-corporate alternative media that we'll discuss and shine a light on here on this show, need your support to survive. So if you find alternative media valuable and enriching to your life, please throw a few dollars. ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, and of course, Media Monarchy is on all the social networks. We're linked up all on the top right page of MediaMonarchy.com. And I want to take a second to thank our recent donors, like John in Colorado, and my man Marshall from right here in Portland, and my man with the honey, that's Steven in Oklahoma. Huge thanks to all the folks out there. Your support helps keep Media Monarchy going and growing. We have a jam-packed episode 207 for you, ladies and gentlemen, as we glance at the breaking news. Popular protests continue against many Arab governments. Middle East tensions flare in Iraq rallies, and Wisconsin GOP wins round one over unions, but final victory still eludes. And what is that final victory? We can ask that question about all these stories we're going to cover. And this week we are going to go through all the sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, all in this jam-packed episode 207. And we will begin with something we are still in, my friends. And that would be nationwide military terror drills known as Solid Curtain, Citadel Shield. They've been running this entire week and are purportedly scheduled to run this week, February 21st through the 25th. Military runs nationwide exercise Solid Curtain, Citadel Shield, and we will take this straight from cnic.navy.mil. Exercise Solid Curtain will be conducted on naval bases and installations throughout the continental United States, Hawaii, and Guam. This annual exercise is designed to enhance the training and readiness of Navy security forces to respond to threats to installations and units. Exercise Solid Curtain Citadel Shield 2011 is not in response to any specific threat, but is a regularly scheduled exercise. Measures have been taken to minimize disruptions to normal base and station operations, but there may be times when the exercise causes increased traffic around bases or delays in base access. Area residents may also see increased security activity associated with the exercise. For more information about Exercise Solid Curtain Citadel Shield 2011, contact the Naval District Washington Public Affairs Officer Ed Ziegler at 202-433-2678. So many links embedded into this story, and we send you to San Diego, to Virginia Beach, to Seattle, to Norwich, Connecticut, to Hawaii, all around the world, or at least our little corner of it. Terror drills running, and I've heard the jets flying overhead here in the Pacific Northwest. So, wherever you are in the North American Union, terror drills, and don't think it's only just Navy bases. Of course, these terror drills and their tentacles reach out through the private contractors and, of course, infrastructure. So let's listen to our breakdown and overview of the current military war games and terror drills, Solid Curtain.
And got the volunteers that be protesters because no one knows them on base, and it's easier to prompt a true response because they see these people that they don't know coming to the front gate and they react accordingly, and everyone's been briefed on what's been theoretically going on in the world as per my drill package. So they react knowing that there's been terroristic threats to bases around the United States, and they've got a group of protesters showing up that they don't know that weren't planned, that they don't know who they are, and are showing up to the gate. So they all handle it accordingly. And that's what goes on. That's how you want the drill to go off. You want it to go off with the most natural response that they would do, and you just grade it accordingly.
Navy-wide, all the installations Navy-wide are doing, participating in exercises, Solid Curtain, Citadel, Shield, and it's to test our responses to force protection conditions increasing, because right now we're submitted because of terrorist threats, but it could be for a lot of different reasons. It also is testing our abilities to deal with different kinds of emergencies. So, you know, we saw that we had the protesters. Tomorrow we'll have some sort of mass casualty, and then the following day we'll have another security-related exercise that we'll have to deal with.
And what happens here is when you have the crash or the mass casualty, we also have an incident command post. So this is the EOC. The incident command post is actually out established at the scene. So for an airplane crash, it'll probably be our fire chief will be in charge of the ICP, is what we call that. And then he'll start communicating information to us here so we can once again start getting the resources we need and then start passing information up our chain of command as well. So it's dependent, it's incident dependent on who is going to be manning an ICP. I mean, if it's a lone shooter or something like we had at Fort Hood, it's going to be a security officer.
Sirens, helicopters, loudspeakers. It is far from normal this week around San Diego naval installations.
Today marked the first day of a massive anti-terrorism drill as the Navy probes for cracks in their security measures. 10 News reporter Bob Lawrence shows us the exercise based on real-world events. Bob?
Well, Steve, it's the first day we were allowed to see this event. A gunman opened fire on a military base back in Texas, and a ship attacked while in foreign ports. Both actually happened, and the goal in this week-long drill is to ensure that it doesn't happen again.
Naval Base San Diego is at force protection condition Charlie.
On the base and on the piers, security personnel face a test. In this scenario, an enemy diver has entered the water. His target, the USS Dewey, a guided missile destroyer.
You're looking at the ability of guys to think through a problem and still be able to operate.
The scenario is a page right out of the USS Cole, which was attacked while tied up in a foreign port. The diver places an explosive charge on the bow of the ship, and as he swims away, the bomb is detonated. But while trying to make his getaway, a trained dolphin spots him and marks the spot in the water.
Effective, whether it's daytime or nighttime. The threat for a ship attack is usually higher at night.
The dolphins, trained in San Diego, get back on the boat for a quick getaway, and the diver is taken into custody. But in the real world,
when I was going toward the ship, I was already taken care of, so I would have never touched the ship in a real-time scenario.
Because every ship has its own force protection, which could have sounded something like this. A small boat or swimmer would have been chewed to pieces. But this drill, which included bringing in civilian assets like Mercy Air, has a purpose.
The loudness, the explosion, the helicopter landing, all those things, those are real things that we need to be able to do, and we need to know and have confidence that we can do them before we actually need them.
Now, though the scenarios are make-believe, they are played out for real, including locking down everything from the front gates to buildings inside, which, of course, plays havoc in and around the facility. Well, different events will play out at every base during the remainder of this week.
Wheels on the bus did not go round and round very quickly in Virginia Beach this morning.
Traffic was at a near standstill around Dam Neck Road as a result of an area-wide Navy security drill. There's the shot to prove it. Four Virginia Beach school bus routes were seriously affected by this, but the schools, quote, did not warn parents in advance. The News 5's Melanie Woodrow found out why. What happened, Melanie?
Well, Tom and Alvita, Virginia Beach school spokesperson told me that the Navy never notified schools about the exercise, but a Navy spokesperson told me that's absolutely ridiculous, that the exercise has been publicized on the news all week long. Meantime, drivers here on Dam Neck Road behind me made the news this morning, going nowhere fast.
If anyone understands the need for a security exercise, you would think it would be Navy wives, but some Navy moms were infuriated by one unintended consequence of the security drill.
9/11 was 10 years ago. If this drill is run every year, this was a decade of drills that they should have a plan for these children.
Early this morning, reports came into the 10 Underside newsroom of serious traffic delays and young children stuck on buses for hours. This is what it looked like on Dam Neck Road around 11 a.m.
Been in traffic 5 hours now.
Imagine a young child on a bus that long. In an email, one Corporate Landing middle school parent wrote, quote, "I'm all for security, but they don't have to shut down an entire area, schools, businesses, etc., in the process." Buses running to Corporate Landing Elementary, Ocean Lakes Elementary, and Ocean Lakes Middle School were also affected. Virginia Beach schools notified parents about the delays at 9:45 this morning. A school spokesperson told 10 Underside the Navy did not notify area schools about the drills. A Navy spokesperson said the information was all over the news. Ellie's daughter got stuck at a child development center at NAS Oceana.
On the newsletters, it said slight delay. 5 hours? That's not a slight delay. That's a big delay.
In NAS Oceana, spokesperson told 10 Underside, quote, "The Navy is exercising their security forces this week, and out of that, the Navy will take lessons learned, i.e., how much it is costing to take certain security parameters, as well as the personnel delays, and determine better ways to do this in the future without compromising our security exercise."
And some good news for those school-aged children. Any kids who were late to school today will not be considered tardy. And Tom, listen to this. Any parents who had to pick up their kids late after hours from one of those child development centers on a Navy base will not be charged late fees. Good news there.
Well, that's good, because the 5 hours, they're going by the hour, they'd be in big trouble, I guess. All right.
I guess so, yeah.
Very much. Melanie Woodrow reporting live, and traffic should be a lot better tomorrow. The Navy exercise is expected to continue, but operations at Navy installation gates, we are told, will return to normal.
Well, the traffic obviously did cause some problems this morning, but some of you didn't seem to mind. On Facebook, Erica said, "If there was a terrorist attack, do you think they would allow people to get to work on time, not to inconvenience you?" No. This was real-world based, so it's going to be an inconvenience. And John said, "How would you feel if there was no military here? Where would our economy and job market be like without them?"
Ah, that's a pertinent question, isn't it? Where would our fantastic economy be without the military-industrial complex? Terror drills normalizing you as a civilian to the military performing routine law enforcement duties and desensitizing the military, as we heard in the very beginning of that clip with those fake protesters, people you won't recognize. But what about the people they will ultimately recognize? And again, we've postulated and speculated on this show throughout the archives that ultimately, if and when it hits the fan, most are going to abandon. Good God. Now all I'm thinking of is that I finished off season one of The Walking Dead last night. And we'll have more on zombie apocalypse. And we'll also have more on drills and somehow their preponderance of turning into real-world events. So we'll ask the question, is this real-world or is this an exercise? We do have the flashbacks to the Media Monarchy Archives, Mock Disaster, Real Lessons, Exercise Solid Curtain 2009, as well as the Military Exercise Solid Curtain 2007. So that should show you we've been following these for quite some time in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. Let's get our related police state updates posted below this story about Solid Curtain. Hidden Hand of NYPD Keeps Us Safe. That's from the Metro. And a hat tip to my man Glenn for sending me the scan of the actual newspaper. I imagine it, like all of us, when we see things around that strike us, you have to grab it. So the physical paper is scanned. That's the photo I put up for you. Hidden Hand of NYPD Protects Us. Meanwhile, TSA screeners at JFK in New York admit to stealing $160,000-plus from passengers. That's from Consumerist.com. From NBC DFW, agent slips past Dallas-Fort Worth body scanner in yet another exercise.
The advanced imaging body scanners are touted by TSA as the latest, most effective layer of security to stop a potential threat from boarding an airliner. Yet a high-ranking, long-time reliable source with direct access to the TSA's latest covert testing out at DFW tells us an undercover agent with a firearm hidden in her undergarments made it through the five body scanners she put to the test at DFW without ever being detected.
And they get through? That's very troubling.
Thankfully, says the former head of American Airlines Security Division, she was testing the system and not a real terrorist.
In this case, where they had a test and it was such a dismal failure, as I've heard, you've got a problem, especially with a firearm.
We are told the tests were conducted last weekend, and the agents who failed to detect the pistol were not even disciplined.
It's critically important that you do something, because if that person failed in a test environment, when the real thing comes along, then you've got a problem.
TSA did not deny the results of last weekend's tests. It only offered up this statement, insisting it does not comment on the results of covert tests. We regularly test our officers in a variety of ways to ensure the effectiveness of our technology, security measures, and the overall layered system. Going on to say, advanced imaging technology is an effective tool to detect both metallic and non-metallic items hidden on passengers. But agents acknowledge that technology is only as good as the officers monitoring it.
So it's a total process. And if there's any one of them that breaks down during this situation, you've got a problem.
Oh, yes, Dallas, we do have a problem. Meanwhile, let's chalk this one up on the positive side. Scant as the chalk marks may be, again from Consumerist.com, Seattle area restaurant refuses to serve TSA agents. Threat level reporting, court likely to uphold the constitutionality of the naked body scanners as they still keep going into more and more and more of our airports. Meanwhile, from my favorite paranoia site, nationalterroralert.com, InfraGuard examines domestic threat. An expert panel discusses violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism. And of course, our latest paranoia from the Washington Post, Saudi student bought materials for bomb and considered Bush home as a target. Paranoia always comes right on time. Speaking of, and we wish our best to the people of Chicago, because you're going to need it. Rahm Emanuel elected Chicago's first Jewish mayor from IsraelNationalNews.com. Former Obama White House Chief of Staff Rahmbo Emanuel has been elected Chicago's first Jewish mayor.
After a long and controversial candidacy, former White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel easily captured the mayor's office of Chicago, marking the first time in nearly four decades the mayor won't have the last name daily.
All I can say, you sure know how to make a guy feel at home.
Yeah! The win comes after a long and heated battle over Emanuel's residency in the Windy City, as well as questions over whether his sometimes abrasive personality would turn off voters. But in the end, Emanuel didn't just win, he trounced the opposition. CNN explains the results.
He won about 55% of the vote. That's more than double the second place finisher. That means he avoids a runoff in April. As you mentioned before the break, yeah, he won 40 of the city's 50 wards. He did extremely well in areas where white voters predominate. He did pretty strong among African-American voters. Jerry Chico, who came in second, who's Hispanic, he won the 10 wards where Latino and Hispanic voters dominate.
Emanuel will inherit Chicago's $600 billion budget shortfall, an underfunded pension system, and a rising crime rate. Some analysts have honed in on a specific power dynamic that might affect how Emanuel tackles these issues, the mayor and city council. A writer for the New York Times says the city council might be poised to butt heads with its new leader. With a crew of new aldermen likely to arrive after the election on Tuesday and a runoff election in April, and another set of aldermen whose political lives have been due, at least in part, to appointments by Mr. Daley, the council's relationship with the incoming mayor appears utterly volatile. But a political reporter from the Chicago Tribune tells Chicago's WGN-TV these obstacles are exactly why the Windy City called Emanuel's name.
Given the reputation that Emanuel established out in Washington as someone really who takes no prisoners, no holds barred fighting, I think it's really a reflection that they want somebody who's going to be a tough guy in the mayor's office. Some tough decisions are going to have to be made, and I think it's a ratification of the belief that he's a tough guy who'll do it.
Finally, on Chicago Fox affiliate WFLD, anchors ask an analyst from the Better Government Association, how will Rahm be different from his predecessor, Richard Daley?
I suspect he's going to model himself more after the way presidents do it, which is limited accessibility. I think it won't be every day with news conferences like Daley. I suspect he'll pick and choose his spots more carefully. I think Rahm will be more detail-oriented and much more methodical and focused.
Rahm Emanuel is set to take office in May when he will become Chicago's first Jewish mayor.
And we hold our breath. Now, we cover this story on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, which should be published any moment now. And I'm not trying to hammer home the fact that from Israel National News and the first Jewish mayor, I could give a rat's ass about anyone's religion or background. The proof is in the sociopathic pudding. And once again, I'll just direct you back to some of the great recent work from CorbettReport.com, the episode Meet Rahm Emanuel, as well as Wayne Madsen and Gary Franchi doing their work into Rahm Emanuel. And this just goes to the heart of the whole corrupt Chicagoland system. And I'll just reference again here for you that, of course, Larry Silverstein now owns the Sears Tower. Let's get our related Obamasiah, Congress critter, fake left-right paradigm updates posted below this story about Rombo. Wisconsin GOP governor in neo-fascist union-busting drive. That could only be from the one and only Webster Tarpley. That full article on tarpley.net. But like so many things on this jam-packed episode, we're not going to be able to go into great detail. But again, I'm relying on you and putting it to you to go check out these articles and do more research for yourself. And again, just because I have something linked up doesn't mean I agree with this or with that. I try and put it all together and give you some context and some subtext and give you the story of the week. Police would absolutely use force on Wisconsin protesters. And how would you do that? Well, during a prank phone call purporting to be from David Koch, one of these secret reactionary right-wing fake conservative funders. But again, both sides completely corrupt. They prop each other up. It's a fake game. And the sooner we can break that, the sooner we can maybe actually move on. But during a prank phone call purporting to be from David Koch, Governor Walker says, well, we thought about planting troublemakers in the Wisconsin protests. You know, agent provocateurs as a false flag to kickstart events, problem, reaction, solution.
Right. We'll back you any way we can. But what we were thinking about the crowds was planting some troublemakers.
You know, the only problem with because we thought about that. The problem with my only gut reaction to that would be right now the lawmakers I talked to have just completely had it with them. The public is not really fond of this. The teachers union did some polling and focus groups, I think, and found out that the public turned on them the minute they closed school down for a couple of days. The guys we got left are largely from out of state, and I keep dismissing it in all my press comments, saying, they're mostly from out of state. My only fear would be is if there was a ruckus caused, is that that would scare the public into thinking maybe the governor's got to settle to avoid all these problems. You know, whereas I'm saying, hey, you know, we can handle this. People can protest. This is Madison, you know, full of the 60s liberals. Let them protest. It's not going to affect us. And as long as we go back to our homes and the majority of people are comfortable doing the right thing, let them protest all they want. So that's my gut reaction. Is that I think it's actually good if they're constant, they're noisy, but they're quiet, nothing happens. Because sooner or later, the media stops finding them interesting.
Well, not the liberal bastards on MSNBC.
Oh, yeah, but who watches that?
Well, my neighbors sure do. And that's, again, the fake political game. Oh, my political party, I'm a blah, 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 and I watch the XYZ network. I'm so different from those other folks that, again, we... Blah. Wisconsin governor may have violated labor law in this Coke call. And, of course, wouldn't you know it, the pranker running for Congress as a Green Party candidate, even though he referred to him as a loser party, showing the utter disdain that the mainline two-party system has for any third party. So more on that from Grist.org and reader-supported news. But let's get a little Obama flashback. It's always nice to listen to the campaign version of whatever puppet happens to be in office.
And understand this. If American workers are being denied their right to organize and collectively bargain when I'm in the White House, I'll put on a comfortable pair of shoes myself. I'll walk on that picket line with you as President of the United States.
So the latest we have right now, again, on this Friday morning, February 25th, the Wisconsin GOP-led assembly approved a bill Friday morning to sharply curtail the power of public employee unions. But the battle for public opinion in Wisconsin and the nation goes on, with the state Senate yet to vote. So our last posted headline to this story, Wisconsin Assembly passes bill taking away union rights. That posted at the bottom of Rombo elected Chicago mayor, the Mossad mayor, if you will. And again, more links in that story to go through the history. Get the text, get the subtext, get it all. My next story I had posted up, the headline seemed incorrect, or I don't know. Did Gaddafi ever fully flee Libya? I don't know that anyone actually knows that, but this is what we see on the grand chessboard, like dominoes falling. Almost like a clash of civilizations. It's like a grand chessboard. Our mantra we should always kind of remember is what was said oh so long ago, that if it happens in politics, you can bet it was planned. Gaddafi flees Libya, but then gives a 15-second speech amid uprising as his government increasingly fell out beneath him. 41-year Libyan dictator Muammar al-Gaddafi struggled to keep projecting an image of power. After a day of rumors about whether he was still in the country, he was said to be planning a major speech this past Monday, but then appeared on state television for approximately 15 seconds, merely to claim that he was in Tripoli.
Well, as we've been mentioning on Al Jazeera, the Libyan leader, Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, he appeared on state television a short while ago, and just listen to what he had to say in his own words.
I was talking with the young people in the Green Square and wanted to spend the night with them, but it started to rain. And I wanted to show that I'm in Tripoli, not in Venezuela. Don't believe these stray dog broadcasters.
And Libyan state television has been airing what it says, confession made by some Tunisian residents that are living in Libya who were allegedly behind some of the unrest in Libya. This man, he's identified as Walid, has been paid money to distribute anti-regime leaflets calling for change and improved standards of living. And this man, he's identified as Ashraf. And Libyan State TV says that he's been given hallucinogenic drugs. So that's what Libyan state television was showing. And now we can just show you what's on their screens at this moment. They're showing an orchestra singing musical instruments, clearly just wanting to show that there's nothing happening in the country. That's what they're airing on Libyan state television. Not the reports that we've been getting from witnesses inside the country.
Strange days indeed. Most peculiar, Mama. Our developing Libyan updates that we do have posted up. 2,000 reported killed in Benghazi, 1,000 in Tripoli. Reports coming from Jerusalem Post as well as Press TV, Libya air raids. Death toll hits 1,000. And we did hear reference in that clip, Gaddafi says protesters are on hallucinogenic drugs. But what we will set up right here, we'll see again, because as we're kind of looking abroad, looking at the grand chessboard, we're going to return here to the North American Union a little bit. So we'll set it up in Libya. Highest gas prices in a February since 1990. That's 21 years. Attributed to Libyan turmoil.
There are growing concerns here in the U.S. over the ripple effect the crisis in Libya and the Middle East is having on gas prices. Joining us now with more on this is ABC's senior business producer, Dan Arnold. Dan, we know that prices have been affected. How much have we seen the spike today?
Well, at this point, the retail gasoline prices across the country are the highest they've ever been in the month of February. That doesn't bode well for the summer driving season. Of course, 2008 was our kind of first rush toward a massive balloon in oil and retail gasoline prices. We remember prices well above the $4 mark in the height of the summer driving season. It certainly looks now, because of what's happening in Libya and around the world, especially in North Africa and the Middle East, we could easily be paying more than $4 a gallon come summertime.
Libya produces more than 1.6 million barrels of oil per day. The country is still exporting, we understand, at this point. But how bad could things be if Libya were to suddenly halt exports?
Well, the global supply and demand for oil is fairly well balanced. If Libya goes offline and we lose that approximately 2% of production a day, it throws that balance out of whack. We're already seeing the effect in the price of oil just on the hint that we could see a prolonged kind of disruption of production in Libya. At this point today, oil prices in New York up more than 3.5%. We're right at $99 a barrel in New York. Could easily top $100 a barrel by the end of trading today.
Dan, is OPEC doing anything just in case Libya were, if we were looking at the worst case scenario of Libya stopping exports?
Well, Libya is, of course, a part of that OPEC petroleum cartel. The Saudi Arabians coming out today and saying that they would step in and increase their production to kind of make up any shortfall of Libyan production if that actually happens. The issue becomes the type of oil these countries produce. In northern Africa, you get light sweet crude. Refineries are really tuned to take in a specific type of oil and produce products like gasoline, jet fuel, and other things. Most of that Saudi production is not light sweet crude. It's a heavy sour crude that requires a different type of refinery. So we could still see supply disruptions at the retail level.
All right, Dan Arnold, some dire predictions there. Thanks, Dan.
Order out of chaos. That's the game plan. Let's get our other related geopolitical grand chessboard updates. In Greece, meanwhile, 30,000 plus people attended a mass rally, which unfortunately turned disgustingly violent. The Daily Mail and AllVoices.com covering the Athens riots erupting as Greek protesters set policemen on fire. Again, looking like something out of a film. Lauren Coleman discussing volcanoes, weather, food, revolutions, and the copycat effect as it concerns all of these things that we've been discussing. Meanwhile, the Bahrain royal family orders the army to turn on the people. More on that from The Telegraph. And from landdestroyer.blogspot.com, Tony Cartolucci has a great piece on George Soros and Egypt's new constitution. For Egyptians, the nightmare is just beginning. Order out of chaos. Our related war horror updates from Blacklisted News. Sherwood Ross writing an exclusive article for the fantastic BlacklistedNews.com. The Great American War Machine rolls on under the Obamasiah, one puppet to another. The parties change, the rhetoric may slightly alter, but the New World Order agenda keeps moving forward. And ultimately, what I'm saying here, study. Pay attention. Don't freak out. I'm not advising you to buy or do or hoard or say or anything. The views expressed on this show are... it's a war on consciousness. U.S. companies sold $247 billion worth of weapons last year. AllGov.com covering that story, and it's not really us. It's not really the U.S. multinational corporations that, just like Ned Beatty said in Network, there are no countries. There's only corporations. There's only Shell. But a fascinating one from the Washington Post will close out our War Horse geopolitics, Libyan events, all of those things. Again, all posted up under the Gaddafi 15-second speech story. Military to investigate claim that PSYOPs team was used to influence U.S. senators. The top U.S. military commander in Afghanistan intends to order an investigation into whether a three-star general responsible for training Afghan security forces inappropriately used members of a psychological operations team to influence visiting U.S. senators into providing more funding for the war. The U.S. command in Kabul issued a statement Thursday saying General Petraeus is preparing to order an investigation to determine the facts and circumstances surrounding the issue. This investigation stems from an article published early Thursday on the website of Rolling Stone alleging that Lieutenant General William Caldwell, the head of the U.S. and NATO training operations for Afghan forces, used an information operations team to manipulate visiting American senators and other visitors, even including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen. The article is based on the claims of a lieutenant colonel who served on a PSYOPs team in Afghanistan last year and who alleges he was subjected to retribution when he resisted the assignment. A spokesman for Caldwell denied that he had done anything improper. U.S. military officials in Afghanistan declined to comment on the matter, citing the impending investigation. Among the senators allegedly targeted by the team were John McCain, Joseph Lieberman, Jack Reed, Carl Levin, the chair of the Armed Services Committee. All four have been longstanding supporters of more funding for training Afghan security forces, so why would they need psychological operations run on them? U.S. admits American arrested for murder in Pakistan worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. This is another story, our second story that we cover on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com, coming soon. Classified a diplomat by the Obama administration until this past Monday, the man arrested in Pakistan for killing two men in Lahore has turned out to be employed by the CIA.
What had been painfully obvious that Raymond Davis worked for the CIA has now been reported, making him an even greater focus of anti-American hatred in Pakistan. Crowds outside the jail where he is being held for having shot and killed two Pakistanis are demanding the death sentence. With the added revelation that he worked for the CIA, U.S. officials fear Davis could be killed by someone inside the jail. In this video, which appeared on Pakistani television, he can be seen showing the police his ID cards and trying to convince them he works for the U.S. consulate in Lahore.
Lahore?
Yes. I just work as a consultant there.
The Pakistanis have moved Davis to a separate part of the jail where dogs taste his food to make sure it's not poisoned. His guards have had their guns taken away so they can't kill him, but now he could be vulnerable to other inmates who are mostly Islamic militants. Eric?
David, the United States has maintained that he has diplomatic immunity. Does the fact that he has worked for the CIA compromise that in any way?
Not according to U.S. officials. Once the Pakistani government was notified that Davis had been assigned to the embassy's staff, he was covered by diplomatic immunity, and it doesn't matter.
You see, the fact is that the Pakistani security establishment is now suspecting very strongly that Davis is the head of a much larger snake. The equipment and the photographs and the evidence that has come out from Davis so far almost confirm his links with the Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan terrorism inside in Pakistan, the attacks on ISI and security establishment and the armed forces, as well as the drone attacks. So, with this kind of evidence, the issue is not just of the assassination of those two boys on the streets of Lahore, but it is of identifying the much larger network of CIA espionage and sabotage inside Pakistan. So, that is why we find every day Pakistan security establishment tightening the cordon around Davis. The access which the Americans had to him has now been restricted. Cameras have been installed in his cell. Security cordon has been increased. And there are even suspicions that even CIA might try to assassinate him just to keep him silent, because there's much more to the incident than what meets the eye.
They told a number of news organizations quite some time ago that we learned this from The Guardian, and The Times has admitted, the New York Times has admitted it, that they knew about this and withheld the information at the request of the Obama administration for some time, maybe as far back as the day after Davis's arrest. I certainly had identified him as an operative of some type all the way back, you know, in early February, in my publication. It wasn't that hard to do. But the thing that is really outrageous is that these major U.S. news organizations, starting with the New York Times, not only withheld the information from Americans, but also allowed the President of the United States and the Secretary of State, but worst of all, the President, to actually publicly state that this guy was a diplomat and that he worked in the Islamabad embassy, both of which were totally lies. And they published those lies, broadcast those lies on the news in the U.S., and did not correct him and did not offer any hint that this was a lie. So, you know, what I think has happened is you see the U.S. news organizations totally crossing the line from being news organizations to being propaganda organs voluntarily. They didn't have to do it. They had the right to publish the information. So, you know, now Obama's credibility is completely shot. The Secretary of State's credibility is completely shot. Nobody anywhere in the world would believe what these guys say about U.S. activities within countries or its adherence to diplomatic protocol and standards.
That's Dave Lindorf discussing the U.S. admitting that Raymond Davis, arrested for murder in Pakistan, works for the Central Intelligence Agency. And again, so many links embedded within this to flesh this story out. And you can go to The Guardian and the aforementioned New York Times and allgov.com. And you can also link up and get those clips that I play for you. But the latest updates we have on this from The Washington Post: Pakistan's ISI ready to split with CIA. Well, that's certainly going to cause some problems since the CIA helped create Pakistan's ISI. In the aftermath of the shooting, rising skepticism about U.S. presence in Pakistan. That's as well from the Washington Post. Redacted News reporting on two other CIA contractors spirited out of Pakistan in the midst of this shooting melee. Danger Room reports CIA spy sparks conspiracy palooza, and that would be this. CIA spy Davis was giving nuclear bomb material to Al-Qaeda. This sourcing back to the Sourcefall EU Times disinfo team. So many things here to flesh out. But Press TV reporting, again, as we just heard in that compilation of clips, captured CIA agent connected to false flags within Pakistan? Question mark. So I'm sure that's not the last we are going to hear of that story of Raymond Davis, and we would not be surprised at all if, of course, they cut this guy loose and let him get whacked, unfortunately. We now move to the massive news purge, the February 24th news purge. Never in my word land could there be ways to reveal. And we'll get to the explanation of that in just a moment. But as we do on the news purge, we go down alphabetically through all the other related news areas. And again, this is a jam-packed episode, so we're going to keep moving quickly. There's a new timeline. Timeline.national911memorial.org. Museum puts 9/11 experience online. An article from the French agency Press is how we begin our 9/11 updates. The New York Museum, dedicated to the 9/11 terrorist attacks on Wednesday, launched an interactive blow-by-blow album of the traumatic day. And we add that the drills, insider trading, stand down, warnings, prior knowledge, and etc. are not included in timeline. 911blogger.com, the first two start to bust out some of the discrepancies and problems with this timeline, and the first of which noted is they are using a World Trade Center Building 5 photo and calling it Building 7. building what? Our last three 9/11 updates all come with clips. And first, We Are Change Los Angeles again interrupts Real Time with Bill Maher.
Oh, I'm not. I want them to have democracy. I'm just saying it's not going to happen unless you get right with your attitudes about women. That has to come with this, or it's never going to happen.
Dad, shut up!
Does this happen for
you? That went better in rehearsal, I gotta say.
Look at what happens when you and Tavis squabble.
I don't know.
Has that ever happened?
Oh, yes.
Oh, God,
I once had to go into that crowd and throw a guy out myself. And I think I might have to do it again. I think it sounds like a prepared speech. That's all I'm saying is that, you know, an ad lib would be a little more impressive.
That was such a real time.
Yeah. And by the way, had nothing to do with what we were saying. Yeah. I mean, yes, obviously, that's another issue which we could debate. I might even be on the man's side about how much we should be having drone attacks against Afghans.
Oh, Bill Maher might be on the side of there is yet another don't tase me bro moment while someone gets hauled away and beaten to a pulp by private security and we kind of look at our shoes and shuffle around and gosh, isn't that a little bit uncomfortable? And that was Kevin Smith yelling shut up as one of the guests on Real Time. But our second of three 9/11 related clips comes from Donald, defender of the Constitution, feigning ignorance on Building 7.
Building 7, I often hear about. No plane hit Building 7. Why did Building 7 come down? What do you tell people?
What is Building 7?
Or when it was at Building 5, or the building that wasn't hit by the plane? Building 7.
I have no idea. I've never heard that.
Oh. Do a talk radio show. Oh, you'll hear it.
That was on the Man Cow show, and the only other thing I would think that would be, you know, a better opportunity presenting itself right there, not only to present Donald Rumsfeld with his lies about the official story of the catalyzing catastrophic events of 9/11 coming up on our 10th anniversary of the American Reichstag event. If he only said, building what? Then, of course, buildingwhat.org could use that sample to further their campaign of public awareness about Building 7. Our third and final clip goes to just one of the hundreds of history mystery points surrounding the events of 9/11. Dentist poisoned to death before being able to testify against the 9/11 hijackers.
Mexico's drug war continues to weigh heavily on both U.S. and Mexican.
That's obviously the incorrect clip. So we'll move to our BioWars EnviroHealth updates with an important piece from naturalnews.com that sources right back to the Seattle Times. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation controls media through massive journalism grants. Most major newspapers and media outlets in the world are owned by a handful of multinational corporate giants who together control the content of what is distributed to the masses. But a recent report in the Seattle Times questions the influence of the world's most powerful foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and their effect on the media as well. The foundation donates billions of dollars every year to fund advocacy and policy programs, and much of this money ends up being distributed as direct payments to media outlets who advocate for the foundation's interests. While much of what the BMGF does and says is wrapped in philanthropic language and problem-solving rhetoric, many of its policies, including its support of mass vaccination and GMOs, present a clear conflict of interest when the foundation's dollars get mixed up in what is ideally supposed to be unbiased journalism. And many now are questioning how severely these payoffs are influencing the media's handling of important and controversial issues. According to the Seattle Times report, the foundation donates millions every year to groups like ABC, The Guardian, The New York Times, PBS, and even the Seattle Times. The foundation also spends millions of dollars training journalists into how to properly advocate for foundation interests and craft media messages in such a way as to further the foundation's agenda. So rather than presenting news, many foundation-funded journalists now present carefully crafted Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation talking points to viewers and readers. Surprise, surprise. Foundation-funded media. So important with the fake left-right paradigm. And we'll follow that up with a piece on colorlines.com, why I support Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, notwithstanding. And this is a fascinating issue that seems to come back yet again as NPR and PBS and Planned Parenthood are all under attack. And these are the issues that then the well-meaning liberals say, oh, these things that I believe actually support me are supposedly under attack. This is the foundation-funded media. Look into the work of Norman Dodd to discover the long-standing impact and the deep, deep roots into foundation-funded media. U.S. House votes 244 to 179 to kill U.S. funding of the IPC. House votes to defund the climate change panel. More on that from CNS News and ClimateGate.tv. Agent Orange outrage over chemical used in Ontario. That's from TimmonsPress.com. But back here in the States, Fort Detrick tested Agent Orange as well. A new report reveals. More on that from BioPrepWatch.com. Meanwhile, Grist reporting that, of course, sitting in traffic triggers more heart attacks than food, drink, coke, and sex. Just like you're way more likely to die in a car accident than ever be struck by terrorism. Meanwhile, the Gulf oil spill will not go away. It's not solved. The air is not safe to breathe, if you will. Baby dolphins dying along oil-soaked U.S. Gulf Coast. More on that from Raw Story. And we close off the BioWars EnviroHealth updates. Massive 6.3 earthquake in New Zealand. And we have a piece from Sign of the Times. Christchurch spire crumbles as the death toll rises in another devastating New Zealand earthquake. And yet again, we find a situation, and thanks to Doug Bloom of Never Know News, or Never NWO News, and he has a screen grab, and we have the link to the video for you. Military exercise during New Zealand's largest earthquake. Wouldn't you know it? There was a drill going on at the exact same time, at the exact same place, performing the exact same duties that somehow, miraculously, coincidentally, flipped live. Our drug war updates. Mexico's President Calderon to talk drug war with Obamasiah next week. More on that from Business Insider. The DEA to legalize THC for Big Pharma, but keep it a crime for everyone else. Again, from naturalnews.com. And our last drug war note from pro8news.com, the Call of Juarez video game lets players pose as cartel assassins.
Mexico's drug war continues to weigh heavily on both U.S. and Mexican national security, but now drug cartels will be taking center stage in a new video game. The game called Call of Juarez, the cartel, has Mexico's Chihuahua state officials asking federal authorities to ban that game.
Local citizens are worried about the influence it could have on Laredo students. Annette Garcia has the story.
What's wrong with a man like you? What he does for a living?
Called Call of Juarez, the Cartel, this violent video game set to be released this summer gives players the opportunity to, quote, take justice into your own hands. Very few gameplay details have been released of what some say is a very anticipated game, but the game's website promotes Call of Juarez as a bloody road trip that begins in Los Angeles, California, and ends in Juarez, Mexico, a modern-day Wild West story that gives the player a chance to become a cartel assassin. The game comes at a time when wars are being waged in Mexico over drug turf, leaving thousands of people dead.
A drug cartel, Juarez, killing, that's not something our students should be playing with.
Director of LISD Campus Crime Stoppers Estela Quintanilla says the game goes too far, making serious situations seem acceptable and drug lords seem glamorous. And now crime rate is going up among juveniles in Webb County, many of which are already being influenced by drug cartels.
The cartels are offering money to poor students along the border from Brownsville to El Paso. And because they're vulnerable, young, 13 was the age of Reta when he was hired, then they are going to take the money.
Laredo and Rosario Reta was found to be a teenage cartel hitman and convicted of murder. Teens and children, Quintanilla says, should understand the drug war is not all fun and games.
We've got to help our future generation stay away from looking at this as a game. If these kids get involved, they'll never be able to get out. They know too much.
And over in Juarez, Chihuahua state officials are asking the Mexican federal government to ban the game, saying they don't want to hide the crime that's happening, but say they don't want children growing up thinking so much blood is normal.
But in the drug war, it's not all fun and games, it's just partly fun and games. We return to the controlled demolition of world financial situations. An implosion happening by design. Our economy crash updates returns to what I aforementioned said now, the part two of how this is going to affect you here in your gas tank. And this comes from a regional news outlet. Gas to rise nearly 40 cents in the next few days.
A scary thought for you this morning. Some analysts say we could see prices at the pump hit $5 a gallon by Memorial Day.
That's actually not too far off. And we've already seen prices skyrocket over all the political protests in oil-rich places like Libya. United's Kent Pierce is live in New Haven this morning. Tell us about those high numbers. Kent.
Yeah, Chris and Kristen, not very good news. You mentioned Libya, political unrest taking a hold there, political protests in several other countries. There's just even rumblings about some trouble in Saudi Arabia. Now, a lot of our oil comes from that part of the world. So even the idea of governments changing there is enough to send crude oil over $100 a barrel. That's the highest it has been in 3 years. And we're already seeing the price of gas going up too. A gallon of regular in Connecticut is up an average of 4 cents in just the past week. We're up 56 cents from where we were a year ago. And remember, prices usually keep going up as we get closer to Memorial Day. Some are warning we could even see gas hits. Yes, you heard it, $5 a gallon. And what we pay at the pump is only the beginning. Basically, the price of everything goes up because everything we buy has to get transported to us, and that requires fuel. Higher prices mean we'll buy less. That causes companies to downsize. Unemployment goes up, and we could be headed back into a global recession just as we were getting out of one. Boy, am I bumming you out this morning. I know, I don't mean to. And this is a worst-case scenario. Remember that this is just what could happen if things really do go bad in the Middle East and North Africa. It all depends on what happens with the governments of those countries and what that does to the price of crude oil. Live in New Haven, I'm Kent Pierce, News 8.
Gas to rise nearly 40 cents in the coming days. Meanwhile, in the Ocano crash, ex-Taylor and Bean bankster treasurer pleads guilty to fraud conspiracy. More on that from Bloomberg. Meanwhile, from ZeroHedge.com, Korean bank run spreading. Now the eighth bank has closed following, quote-unquote, massive withdrawals. And from ChinaTechNews.com, Best Buy to close all their retail stores in China. Into our media memes, movie industry tops $30 billion box office record. Talk about evil pirates. The movie industry certainly had something to celebrate when it announced 2010's box office revenues. For the first time in history, box office grosses worldwide have surpassed the magic $30 billion mark, and revenues are up 8% compared to 2009. But it's not all positive news. Despite their achievements, in a surreal plot twist, the MPAA is still calling for tougher legislation and strict enforcement to deal with the ever-looming piracy ghost. More on that from torrentfreak.com. From Pop Matters, JFK symbolism on The Sopranos, and I thought it was quite timely that that article just came out as I just watched the first few episodes of The Sopranos. Meanwhile, the New York Post reporting, seen around town, Prince Andrew and pervert billionaire Jeffrey Epstein strolling around New York City. And of course, our degenerate elites usually are inbred foolish mass. And of course, we're looking forward to the royal wedding coming very soon. That's right, the Antichrist will take a bride. And a few obituary notes. Perry Moore, producer of the recent Chronicles of Narnia film, dies of an apparent drug overdose at the age of 39. Actress Betty Garrett, appearing in film and TV and Broadway for decades, passes away at the age of 91. And George Shearing, jazz legend, virtuoso, the man behind Lullaby of Birdland, has died at the age of 91. So, of course, not to be confused with the Lullaby of Broadway. Let's listen to the 1952 instrumental version of Lullaby of Birdland from George Shearing. Birdland from jazz virtuoso George Shearing, dead at the age of 91. And that's how we're going to begin the second hour. I suppose we're well into the second hour of this episode 207 from MediaMonarchy.com. It's February 25th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show Media Monarchy, coming to you live, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and zeropointradio.com, and revereradio.net. And, of course, a huge thanks to all our affiliates who help broadcast and syndicate the show. FROlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, TragedyAndHope.com, and so many more. So as we continue down the news purge, we know that, unfortunately, media memes usually lead into murder and mayhem. And we have an update on the mysterious murder of John P. Wheeler. The original story goes back to the early days of 2011, when John P. Wheeler III, a counsel on foreign relations and MITRE, private military contractor insider, was found dead in a Delaware landfill. Now, his widow claims He was killed by a hitman. From the Daily Mail, prominent Washington aide John Wheeler was assassinated by a hitman in a targeted killing, his widows claimed. Catherine Kleist, K-L-Y-C-E, said the way her late husband's body was dumped at a landfill site could only have been carried out by a professional. The 66-year-old suggested his work with the Pentagon over his decades-long career could have made him enemies who wanted to get rid of him. She also attacked the police investigation into his death and claimed it had made her life miserable. Typo on the Daily Mail. Officers have confiscated personal items, including credit cards, and strange charges have been appearing on them in recent weeks, including two flights worth $3,000, she said. The body of Mr. Wheeler, age 66, a former Army officer who was instrumental in building the iconic Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall in D.C., was discovered in a landfill in Wilmington, Delaware, on New Year's Eve. A Harvard and Yale graduate, he had served as a military advisor to three presidents and lived in Newcastle with his wife, a silk importer. Landfill workers found him on New Year's Eve when a garbage truck containing his body completed its run at the Cherry Island landfill and threw his body out. He had been in a commercial dumpster in Newark, Delaware, about 12 miles from his home and 15 miles from Wilmington, where it was picked up by a garbage truck and taken to the landfill site. Ms. Kleist told Slate.com, "I think perhaps no one has been on the reward because they've already been paid. The way they disposed the body, it's a miracle anybody ever found it. That just sounds like a pro to me." Turning to the police, she said, "They had been so bad and made my life miserable." After Mr. Wheeler's death, the whole family went to Newark Police Station for interrogation. "They treated us like criminals. All of us. They were rude. They just don't have a clue. I think they wish it would all just go away." Pentagon aide was killed by hitman, claims distraught widow. And our other murder and mayhem note seems, in a way, a world away. But from Celebrific.com, Charles Manson's attorney asks Obama to set him free. Giovanni DiStefano, the longtime lawyer for serial killer Charles Manson, has reached out to Obama asking the president to set his client free. DiStefano, the same guy who tried to help Saddam Hussein, says that Manson was simply a cult leader and not a murderer, as he's been made out to be by some of his former followers and much of the press. The lawyer tells TMZ that at worst, Manson told his followers to do something witchy, but never said to commit acts of murder on his behalf. According to DiStefano, quote, "Manson has been made out in America to be the Satan of the criminal justice system. He does not deserve the title." And we close out our news purge with West Virginia worry. Of course, born and raised West Virginia boy. But first, our Oregon oddities, and I've been in the People's Republic of Oregon for over 5 years now, and you got to see the photo of the cover story on our own Willamette Week here. Oregon congressman was asked to seek mental help. KXL reporting, and again, the aforementioned WWeek.com, a mass resignation by staffers of Congressman David Wu, that's W-U, drew attention to some increasing stress in his office. Reports are coming out that staffers were worried about increasingly aggressive and erratic behavior by Wu in the weeks leading up to his winning a seventh term in Congress. Some staffers say they tried an intervention 3 days before the election, calling Wu into a room and urging him to seek psychiatric help. Reportedly, Wu stormed out of the meeting saying he was going to go see a movie instead. Wu withdrew from any more campaign events and public appearances until after the election. It was shortly after Wu's win that a large number of staff members turned in their resignations. In a written statement, Wu says he is seeking professional help. The congressman blames his behavior on the stress of the job and raising two kids by himself after a recent divorce. Wu says he'll do everything he can to continue being a good father to his children. Weaselzippers.us reporting as well. Bizarro Democrat Congressmaniac rejects calls for his resignation. Meanwhile, one of our other elected officials who's not quite so insane, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, taking on the Patriot Act, as we reported to you last week. Of course, the extensions, again, doesn't matter which party's in power, they will keep the continuity of government, shadow government actions going. And they codify it and they legalize it retroactively. Grade school in Hillsboro briefly goes into lockdown after man falsely says another man was chasing him with a gun. That's from OregonLive.com. Another Silicon Valley solar startup to build a factory in Oregon. That is again from Grist, and they end that article by asking the question, gee, how many of these will actually end up in Oregon homes? And our last note from KGW, and this is not from the recent sketch comedy show on IFC called Portlandia. How a sonic bike lane might sound. That's right. We want to build on the forthcoming bridge a sonic bike lane.
Riding your bike across the Willamette could soon be music to your ears, literally. TriMet is looking to create a sonic bike path on its new Willamette River Bridge. What exactly is that? News Channel 8's Keely Chalmers looked through the plans and the notes, and she's here to tell us about it. Keely?
Joe, this would definitely be a first of its kind, a melodic stretch of pathway that, in typical Portland fashion, is getting some mixed reviews. It would be part of the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project. The project includes a brand new transit bridge across the Willamette River, but this won't be your typical bridge. On each end of the bridge, TriMet wants to put in sonic bike path. They would be 150-foot long stretches made up of a series of grooves that, when biked over, would create a melody. The song TriMet is considering is fittingly feeling groovy, but not all are in tune with this project.
As a biker, I depend on sound a lot, so I would worry it would be distractive.
I think it's fun. I think it could be really interesting. It could be another thing that sort of marks Portland as a neat place to come and ride your bike.
TriMet says it will pay for the entire Sonic Bike Path project with money from an art fund. It's money that has already been set aside and can only be used for artistic projects. Coming up new at 6, just how soon we could hear this bike path making music.
That's how we roll in Portlandia. Good God. Our West Virginia worry, CEO of failed credit union gets 9 years in prison for embezzling and money laundering. More on that from businessweek.com. Meanwhile, Manchin launching a Common Sense Connections initiative. Two West Virginia coal miners indicted on federal charges. And yes, West Virginia residents will soon get the chance to purchase locally raised natural beef. West Virginia residents will soon have the choice to purchase locally raised natural beef under a brand new test program. The Mountain State Natural Pilot Program has 6 farmers and 30 cattle to test the market with. Executive Director Melissa Hinterer explains that the cattle must be able to graze daily to qualify for the Mountain State Natural label. Farmers are also banned from giving the cattle hormones or steroids. The West Virginia University Extension Service will be working with farmers on the basics of genetic feeding and all other aspects of raising cows naturally. A farmers cooperative has been created for natural meat production. For more information, you can go to the Exponent Telegram, cpubco.com. Mountain State Natural, and I'll just mention, perhaps if you don't know, West Virginia is the Mountain State. That closes out the massive news purge and sets the stage perfectly for the latest that we have posted up on foodworldorder.com. First from cornucopia.org, Peace Cereal illegally misleading customers. The Cornucopia Institute filed a complaint with the FTC alleging that Hearthside Food Solutions, which manufactures Peace Cereal, is misleading consumers by suggesting that its natural breakfast cereals are grown and processed without pesticides. The Peace Cereal website states that natural foods are foods without pesticides or artificial additives, as well as being minimally processed and preservative-free. However, unlike organics, there is no federally regulated standard for the term natural on foods which contain conventional non-organic ingredients. Natural foods are essentially conventional foods with a higher price tag, whereas organic foods are grown without the use of toxic pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and chemical fertilizers, explains Charlotte Valais, Farm and Food Policy Analysis with Cornucopia. Stating that natural foods are without pesticides is completely without basis and highly misleading to consumers. Peace Cereal, whose products were formerly certified organic, has been using conventional ingredients since 2008. Conventional ingredients are routinely sprayed with toxic pesticides and herbicides. Without organic certification, consumers cannot be assured that ingredients used in conventional products like Peace cereal are truly without pesticides. And again, for those of you who know or may not know, I do work at a grocery store here in Portland, Oregon, and I do stock and put Peace cereal up on the shelf. And we've discussed in the past on Food World Order some of the organic fakery and all of these battles going on, and the one area that we can make some kind of effect, take some kind of move, make some kind of change. The one other funny thing that this story reminds me of that I had almost forgotten about, I don't recall exactly who told me, but at some point on the Peace cereal boxes, of course on the address label and the contact spot on the side of the box, there was a phone number, and whoever told me, it was probably someone within the store from one of our other stores, said, hey, call that number. You call that number, and it was a sex line. So that was fun being able to take that box to the manager and say, hey, call that number. Not long after that, the boxes started to show up with little stickers put over that incorrect sex line number. But enough about that. Let's get the binge and purge from the Food World Order. Suburban Survivalists, Biofuels, and Baby Gaga. Technorati.com reporting Suburban Survivalists Hoarding Food, Water, and Weapons. This is filed under their women's area. So again, Suburban Survivalists. Terror threats rising as FEMA orders $1 billion in dehydrated food. Monsanto shifts all liability to farmers. More on that from MorphCity.com. Meanwhile, UK ice cream parlor launches Baby Gaga. That's the breast milk ice cream. Meanwhile, USDA has raised their projections. Food costs will increase 4%. In 2011, and here we are still only in February. Plenty of time to keep raising those projections. Former President Bill Clinton warns that using too many biofuels could lead to global food riots. More on that from CanadaBusiness.com. Meanwhile, food prices and the food price rises bring risk of new riots in France. That's coming from Reuters. Bolivia's Evo Morales aborts a public appearance amid fears of a food riot. That coming from the UPI. So, fears about things possibly, maybe, perhaps becoming food riots are already happening. We shift now to the latest site in the media monarchy kingdom. That's holyhexes.com. Covering the occult, just for you. First from the Times of India, China's anti-reincarnation law aimed at wiping out Tibetan identity. The new Chinese law, which would come into effect in the next month, banning reincarnation of the Dalai Lama and other Buddhist monks in Tibet, was aimed at wiping out the Tibetan identity and its rich culture, says exiled Tibetan government based in India, saying Monday. The new law, which stipulates Buddhist monks in Tibet to seek permission from Chinese communist regime for reincarnation, has been ironically described by Chinese State Administration for Religious Affairs as an important move to institutionalize management of reincarnation.
That's in our first headline here. China bans reincarnation without government permission. The law, which goes into effect next month and strictly stipulates the procedures by which one is to reincarnate, is, quote, an important move to institutionalize management of reincarnation.
Oh, the Dalai Lama, right. Now the Chinese government wants to control the cosmic reincarnation wheel to make sure that the Dalai Lama doesn't come back to somehow mention to the people that they might want a system other than capitalist slash communist slash totalitarianism slash American-style neoliberal market manipulation. J.P. Morgan sucks.
That's, of course, the one and only Max Kaiser. But furthermore, on holyhexes.com, is the Vatican's darkest secret that there is no apostolic succession? An article from PressCorps.ca getting into the Vatican, considered a castle by some, a temple by most. The Pope does not live, walk, sleep, sit, worship, and breathe the air of the Holy Land, but instead lives in a temple where he sits at the head of state with an estate. That state is Vatican City. We have discussed, I believe, or at least made brief reference to the city-states, the empire of the city, and what this article is basically getting into, the fact the Roman Catholic faith was created not by the teachings and followings of Jesus Christ, but by Roman Emperor Constantine, a pagan sun worshiper, 300 years after the Romans had put Jesus to death. There is no apostolic succession. There is no proof that you are descended, and we can put that out to any of the other religions that are bringing us to a man-made, self-fulfilling, prophetic Armageddon. But from the documentary Empire of the City, let's break down Vatican as the one of three main obelisk-holding city-states.
Did the world wars, revolutions, and big events of human history evolve naturally, or were they calculated and pre-planned? If they were pre-planned, who planned them, and what are they planning for the future of humanity? The answer to this puzzling question can be found within the boundaries of three of the world's most powerful cities. Those three cities belong to no nation and pay no taxes. They are Washington's District of Columbia, which is not part of the city of Washington or of the United States, the inner city of London, which is not part of London or England, and Vatican City, which is not part of Rome or Italy. These cities, called city-states, have their own independent flag, their own separate laws, and their own separate identity.
Vatican City is in fact a state, the smallest principality in the world. It lies on the banks of the Tiber, completely surrounded by the city of Rome. Its status as a separate state emerged from the Lateran agreements of February 1929. It has its own newspaper, postal service, radio and television station, its own flag, and a population of about 1,000.
The Vatican also has its own army of Swiss guards, and it even has its own prison. Gracing the walls of St. Peter's Basilica is the Vatican-approved image of God, an angry, bearded man in the sky, painted by Michelangelo. Sinners who disobey God's list of thou shalt nots risk incurring his wrath and damnation and burning in Satan's eternal hellfire. Cruel and violent images of God's tortured son, suffering, bleeding, and dying, with thorns gouged through his skull and nails pounded through his feet and hands, are on display throughout the Vatican. These images serve as reminders that God allowed his son to be tortured and killed to save the souls of human beings who are all born sinners. These explanations and scary images are especially difficult for children to comprehend. The Vatican rules over approximately 2 billion of the world's 6.1 billion people. The colossal wealth of the Vatican includes enormous investments with the Rothschilds in Britain, France, and the USA, and with giant oil and weapons corporations like Shell and General Electric. The Vatican's solid gold bullion, worth billions, is stored with the Rothschild-controlled Bank of England and the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank. The Church is the biggest financial power, wealth accumulator, and property owner in existence, possessing more material wealth than any bank, corporation, giant trust, or government anywhere on the globe. The Pope, who is the visible ruler of this colossal global wealth, is one of the richest men on earth. While two-thirds of the world earns less than $2 a day, and one-fifth of the world is underfed or starving to death, the Vatican hoards the world's wealth, profits from it on the stock market, and at the same time preaches about giving. How did the Pope and Vatican accumulate all that wealth?
The answer to that question is within that massive and amazing documentary, Empire of the City. You can Google it. It's sometimes called Ring of Power. And while I don't agree with the tenor and tone of everything in the film, it is jam-packed with massive amounts of information going thousands of years back to the very present day. So we mentioned the Pope, who currently is a former Hitler Youth and rumored and speculated to be the penultimate Pope. But as we turn to the 224 pop culture list of headlines on HolyHexes.com, Zombie Pope Genesis Code. We reported to you recently that the deceased John Paul II is going to become a saint. They are preparing the beatification. And what will they do for this beatification, among other things? John Paul II to be exhumed.
The Vatican has released the official schedule of events for the beatification of John Paul II. They wanted to note that entry is free and no tickets will be required. The announcement included a surprise that for a few hours, the coffin of John Paul II will sit next to the main altar in St. Peter's. The official ceremonies will begin the night before the beatification with a massive vigil in one of the most attractive spots in Rome, the Circus Maximus. The Pope has said he wants to connect via satellite to speak with the attendees. It's a large field where it's expected many pilgrims will camp out because it's already close to impossible to find a hotel for the night in Rome. Benedict XVI will celebrate the beatification on Sunday at 10 a.m. in St. Peter's Square. The area will most likely be cordoned off overnight and begin to allow access in the early hours of the morning to help avoid with overcrowding. That same day, the Vatican will show the coffin of John Paul II. They will later privately transfer it to the Chapel of San Lorenzo, located in the Basilica of St. Peter's, a place that will make for easy access to pilgrims. Rome is already preparing to welcome about 1.5 million pilgrims. The Eternal City has plenty of experience in playing host to large crowds. The authorities are already working to help the millions of pilgrims feel at home when they arrive.
There sure are a massive amount of events seeming at the same time. We're going to have the royal inbred wedding of the Antichrist coming very soon, the beatification of this zombie pope, and all of the other things going on around the world, powder kegs looking for sparks that ultimately, again, our misleaders, our multi-generational serial killers, trying to create order out of chaos. You got to see the illustration of Zombie Pope that I found for you and posted it up again, perhaps inspired by The Walking Dead in a way. But yeah, nothing like hanging out with a 6-year-old corpse. Further down the pop culture list, new Christian book, Last Things Revealed, attempts to breathe hope into anxiety about the end times.
With appropriate caution, I think they could be the last days. I feel like, quite obviously, there's more reason to believe that now, and quite obviously, we're closer now than we were before. But I think, you know, many generations have jumped the gun on this and judged themselves to be the last generation, and were wrong. So, you know, understanding that we need to be cautious and we need to be humble and understanding what Jesus said in the Olivet Discourse, that nobody knows the day or the hour. Still, I think there are reasons to believe we're in the season of his return, and I think there are signs that would indicate that we likely are.
Do you have anxiety about the end times? Arab unrest signals Messiah's coming. That's from YNetNews.com. Meanwhile, from Belief Blog, Jewish musicians Drake versus Modest Yahoo, kosher beef between two rappers. Meanwhile, the New York Daily News reporting Billy Ray says his family is under attack by Satan, and he is scared for his daughter Miley, as he probably should be. She seems to be in that same line of some type of bizarre Hollywood mass mind control. Anna Nicole. Oh yeah, there's an Anna Nicole musical opening. But more on that from the New York Daily News. Meanwhile, from BeliefNet, Christian movie The Genesis Code draws a political crowd, and the man who threatened Parker and Stone, the South Park creators, for their Muhammad episode gets 25 years in prison. An interesting one from fizorg.com. Many historians no longer see alchemy as an occult practice. And of course, that reminds us that the South Park boys just opened the Book of Mormon on Broadway. Meanwhile, God Bless America. New documentary attempts to debunk the paranormal.
Isn't it funny how a knock at your door can change your life forever? Unfortunately, that knock had me wearing a pink tutu and running from neo-Nazi skinheads. So that's me, Blake. And this is the old man that got me here.
Leroy.
Meet Leroy. He's a true believer.
So you really, honestly, deep in your heart, believe that you have to spend money to save yourself from alien abduction?
Yeah, in a certain extent.
Meet Blake. He's not.
Aliens, psychics, and ghosts? I'm going to take this guy across the country and prove to him that this stuff is not real.
All right, are you guys excited to be here at the UFO Festival? Got on my spaceship this morning and had my latte, and I'm here. So we're ready to work it.
For instance, anal probing. If the aliens are so advanced, once they've been up one ass, all the asses are probably going to look the same.
Kind of.
If they're so far advanced.
You would have. We do. There's something going on there.
Why do I have two ears? Two noses, man.
You've got one nose, brother. Your mother was raped by aliens.
Not raped, artificially inseminated. The same way Jesus was.
Well, they had to put... Jesus wasn't an artificial... Wait a minute.
Boom!
Push that life alert button around your neck. No way humans could have done
this
in the middle
of
the night.
That's what I used to think.
The radiation did that.
Yes, I believe it did. I'm certain this is the real deal.
Okay, we're approaching the target area right now. This is the best part.
What do you think he's thinking right about now?
I don't know. I think he'd be pretty surprised, at the very least.
I don't think surprised is his reaction.
Son of a bitch!
That is shooting what?
God Bless America, new documentary attempting to debunk paranormal and UFOs and all of that. That's G-A-W-D, God. And of course, wouldn't you know it, the annual UFO conference is going on right now in Phoenix.
NASA preparing for the final launch of the space shuttle Discovery today, but in Arizona they are focusing on unidentified flying objects. Yes, the International UFO Conference is holding its annual meeting near Phoenix. Alex Savage with our Fox affiliate KSAZ has more.
If you're ready to believe, then this is the place for you.
I think everybody should be interested because isn't that the biggest story in the world, a visitation from an extraterrestrial civilization?
More than 700 people here in the Valley right now for the 20th annual International UFO Congress. On display here, all kinds of evidence, alien life forms. Even one woman who claims she's not entirely human.
I am a hybrid. I am 34% human, 28% Zuma Zeta. Zeta, 28% Zeta.
Cynthia Crawford is a sculptor from Apache Junction who makes these statues of extraterrestrials. She says people who buy them are often visited.
And when they have contact, sometimes they're taken on the ship, sometimes it's only telepathic communication.
Everybody needs to read the material and read literature.
Bob Terrace from Las Vegas comes to this convention every year. He says he started to believe after a visit to Area 51, and he thinks a lot of people have had contact, they just don't realize it.
You know, I see you have a little mark on your forehead, so that indicates that, yeah, it's another little interesting scoop. I have one. You have one.
What does that mean?
Some people, that's one of the things I'm here to figure out, too.
I've never noticed a mark on my forehead. I'm not quite sure what he's talking about. Let me get a closer look in the mirror here. Oh, that mark.
The good news for all of us, everyone here seems to agree, extraterrestrials aren't coming to Earth to do us any harm.
All right, is everyone out there now looking at their forehead in the mirror? All I see is wrinkles. Is that sign of alien life? Is this? This is quite a mark. 28% Zeta. We're looking into it. Well, moving on.
Yeah, and I'm not sure which part of that is more ridiculous. Closing out the pop culture headlines on holyhexes.com with two articles, the first of which from the Washington Post, Guyana group to rebuild church tied to Jim Jones. Officials in Guyana are rebuilding a stately colonial church destroyed by fire that once served as a base for U.S. cult leader Jim Jones. Construction of the new Sacred Heart Church in the capital of Georgetown will begin Friday, church spokesman Ramsal Ali said Thursday. The $450,000 church will be built in concrete. The previous one was wood. and is designed to hold 500 people, 200 fewer than the original one. Ali declined to answer any questions related to Jim Jones, who obtained permission to use the church in the mid-1970s to provide what turned out to be fake healing services. On November 18, 1978, Jones led more than 900 cult members, mostly Americans, into a jungle clearing where they drank cyanide-laced grape-flavored punch while others were shot by guards loyal to Jones. The original church was built in the late 1860s by Portuguese settlers. Investigators blame the Christmas Day fire that destroyed the church 6 years ago on an electrical malfunction. But our last note on holy hexes goes to the Belief blog on CNN. Slain Americans were delivering Bibles. Americans Gene and Adam Scott were on a mission to distribute Bibles around the world when their yacht was hijacked by Somali pirates. On Tuesday, U.S. CENTCOM said the Adamses, along with Phyllis McKay and Bob Riggle, had all been killed by their captors. A U.S. Navy ship had been trailing the captured Americans after their yacht Quest was overtaken by pirates on Friday. This, another sad situation concerning the Somali pirates, and as even I first heard it from my man Clyde Lewis, getting into the story of why do these things go on around Somalia, and it seems to come down to the point that essentially it's a land without a leader, no government to speak of, and they are literally the trash heap in the ocean where mass amounts of multinational corporations and otherwise dump all their garbage. Again, it sounds like something out of Star Wars, with scavengers and pirates and dumping and... But I misspoke. We do have one more piece on holyhexes.com, and this goes to my own backyard here in Oregon from BeliefNet. Oregon bill would end protections for faith healers. Oregon prosecutors and lawmakers endorsed a bill this past Monday, February 21st, that would remove special legal protection for parents who treat seriously ill children with faith healing instead of providing medical treatment. Clackamas County District Attorney John Foote and others told the House Judiciary Committee that House Bill 2721 would help halt needless avoidable child deaths. The bill is a response to the Followers of Christ, and they have their own Wikipedia entry, an Oregon City church with a history of children dying from treatable medical conditions. This bill would remove spiritual treatment as a defense against all homicide charges and subject parents to mandatory sentencing under Oregon's Measure 11, which goes back to 1994. Supporters of the bill made two main points. It'll eliminate exemptions that give one class of parents, those who exclusively practice faith healing, special rights. And it puts more pressure on the most extreme members of the Followers of Christ Church to provide medical care for seriously ill children. In the past 2 years, Clackamas County prosecuted two couples for failing to provide medical care for dying children. Two other couples are awaiting trial, accused of criminal mistreatment and second-degree manslaughter. For more on this disturbing story, we found the other stories from the Oregonian and around that relate to these other couples and these other trials. Oregon bill would end protection for faith healers. That's the ugly end of holy hexes. And we'll move for the remainder of this show, I believe, for cyberspacewar.com. And again, huge thanks to not only Alan, who's taken on writing and editing duties on cyberspacewar.com, but as well as the other folks who are slowly but surely getting into the kingdom and helping me post and edit things on Media Monarchy and Food World Order and Holy Hexes and Cyberspace War. First note, we'll mention Wilhelm Reich. Quack or threat? Was there a heavy-handed attempt to censor the work of Wilhelm Reich? The FDA dismissed Reich's idea of a life force or orgon as quackery. Was the FDA protecting the public by destroying all references to orgon energy? Reich remains a significant historical figure, once a student of Sigmund Freud and himself a noted psychoanalyst. Reich's work in biophysics and orgon, however, has been stricken from the historical record. This goes on to many other areas that, again, we do not have time to get into, but it contains cloud busting and orgon accumulators And again, like so many things, we'll just put the question to you to decide for yourself, quack or threat. The 224 DEF CON on Cyberspace War, Transhumanism and You, with a bit from goddiscussion.com that also sources back to a BBC report, Human 2.0, where biology and technology merge in 2029. It's Transhumanism and You.
There's a moment in the near future that scientists believe will transform the notion of what it is to be human. By conducting some of the most controversial experiments, scientists are unlocking the secrets of the human brain, moving us towards the moment when it will be possible to store our minds in machines. Then, we will be able to change what we are and who we are. So threatening is this future scenario that one man has killed to try and prevent it ever happening. This is the story of how biology and technology will combine to create a new kind of human. A human version 2. These men are expecting something very special to happen. Some are making this event, some simply waiting, but all believe it will transform the way future generations define being human.
Well, I believe that my children's children will be able to start learning what we truly are by unmasking amazing truths about how the brain works.
I believe that my children's children will live in a world with tremendous computing power, including quantum computers that can do more than any other computer could possibly do.
For some, the coming of this event offers untold possibilities.
I believe my children's children are going to be able to, in the future, download their thoughts, store their memories, and interface with machines.
For others, this future is already something to be afraid of.
I truly fear for my children's children. They will be alive in a very possibly a technologically driven war. They'll be caught up in it, and they may even be destroyed by it.
What lies behind these hopes and fears is the knowledge that computers will soon equal the power of the human brain. And it is at this moment that something very special will happen. We will be able to change the very nature of who we are, to create a new kind of human. To those in the know, this moment has a name. It is called the Singularity.
The Singularity. Strange new music for strange new times, indeed. Further down the DEF CON list on cyberspacewar.com, continuing saga of data security firm that's called H.B. Gary. And the Air Force ordered their software to help manage an army of virtual fake people. More on that from Raw Story. That's right, they are fighting the net as if it were an enemy operation system, engaging the public in propaganda and psychological operations. Farmwars.info, Barbara Peterson, who you may recall we interviewed several months back, she has found, or has at least reposted, a patent that purports to show nervous system manipulation from TV monitors, the flicker rate. You may have heard of something about that before. More on that from FarmWars.info. Meanwhile, CNET News reporting our own internet kill switch bill getting a makeover. Does it still contain the kill switch provisions that folks like Lieberman and Rockefeller and all the others are clamoring for? Voice of America site knocked off by Iranian cyber army. More on that from the Vancouver Sun. India plans to tighten rules for their cyber cafes. And I suppose a follow-up to last week's story about the Final Solutions company and their Watson Jeopardy showdown. Well, it's not going to go away. More from eWeek.com. IBM's Watson supercomputer goes to work for you with 11 personal apps. As users move to smartphones, so do cyber criminals. That's from TechZone 360. And our last note on a developing story, British court rules Julian Assange to be extradited to Sweden. But all of that remains to be seen. Furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com from Business Insider, Google collected part of kids' social security numbers for an art contest. Google asked parents to enter the last four digits of their children's social security numbers, as well as their city of birth and age, as a condition to enter a Google-sponsored art contest called Doodle for Google. As movie director Bob Bowden points out on the Huffington Post, of course, gobbled up by AOL, Google could have easily guessed the remainder of the numbers from the other information they collected. This data could be extremely valuable to marketers. Some of the people who tipped Bolden off about the story sent an email to the FTC on February 17th wondering if it was even legal to solicit kids' Social Security numbers. The next day, Google updated the consent form, removing the spaces for the Social Security numbers. There's no evidence Google actually did anything with the information, but it's certainly a weird set of data to collect for a kids' contest. Google has, of course, come under fire several times for having a seemingly cavalier attitude towards privacy, and this don't help matters. But from the cyber to the space, a burst of solar activity this past week generated also dire warnings. An article from space.com, catastrophe looming, the risks of rising solar activity. Even if this is a really lackluster solar cycle, as it looks like it's shaping up to be, that doesn't mean you can't have a real bell-ringing event, as we get warnings about solar flares and CMEs, coronal mass injection, or even an EMP event from some type of weapon.
Now to a powerful eruption in space. The Earth's atmosphere has been affected by the sun, unleashing its strongest flare in 4 years. These pictures show the Aurora Borealis, or Northern Lights, as seen from near northern Norway. The solar flares excited the gas particles, making them glow even more brightly. But beyond the great views, NASA warns the eruption could disrupt electrical power grids and satellite communication over the next few days.
What will we see? What are we being prepared for? Just flip the channel or see what's on, and it's Battle Los Angeles and all of these things. Lunar lights on a hollow moon and other cyber space war stories. But we'll lastly mention Nazi UFOs, Antarctica, and the aforementioned Battle of Los Angeles. My man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org stirred old myths on his Sunday night show with an interview with Douglas Dietrich, former San Francisco Presidio military librarian, who answered calls for occultist and military officer Michael Aquino. Dietrich goes into Japanese dirigible technology and the 1942 Battle of Los Angeles. A psychological operation. Was it aliens? Was it an invasion? Of course, this being capitalized on with the new movie that's coming out on 311, Battle Los Angeles. So the latest episode that we have posted up on Media Monarchy from Clyde Lewis, Euphoria's Secret, the undercover story, and I would always recommend checking out the original show art that Clyde does for each episode. This most recent one looking like the cover of the Weekly World News, which I believe I joked last week. It seems like the show and the world is turning into this kind of situation, as it's art imitating life, imitating politics. Clyde also added, as an update, even more images from Douglas Dietrich. And again, donate to Clyde, help out Ground Zero, check out groundzerotv.org. And also, my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Episode 176, 30 Ways You're Being Spied Upon. exploring the myriad ways that government and corporations are tracking, databasing, monitoring, logging, recording, and generally spying on your every movement. Is there any hope for personal freedom in the technological surveillance society? In the latest videos, the Sunday update from February 20th, activism rising, of course, casting an eye all around the world is what we see going on by the moment. And the second entry in the new Last Word series, the Last Word on terrorism. The previous Last Word was on overpopulation. Both videos gone really great. They all have tens of thousands of views. And then James topped himself by appearing to huge numbers and huge acclaim, and of course the controversy. James Corbett was a guest on the Alex Jones Show Friday, and of course thanks to James for giving the hat tip to MediaMonarchy.com on GCN. Of course that went out worldwide. And there's all the battles about should you go on this show, or I don't like that guy, and you should know, and I hope that folks find Media Monarchy valuable in that we don't really play the Patriot games and argue about which host we like best and who's a disinfo and who's an agent and all of that. You can figure all that stuff out yourself. You know in your gut what's genuine, and everything else is just mudslinging, and everything else falls right into exactly what Fox or MSNBC and all the fake left-right political paradigm does so well. So just because the mainstream corporate media has the problem doesn't mean the alternative media is perfect by any stretch. What we're doing, I'm doing, is a one-man band the best I can, and it's with your help that we're able to keep all of this going and spinning these plates for as long as we can, as we kind of learn and grow and hopefully go through whatever we're going to see. Of course, all the other interviews, all the other videos, all the other amazing alternative media from CorbettReport.com. Slight technical difficulties with the latest New World Next Week episode. However, it will be published very, very soon, and perhaps already will be by the time many of you hear this. So as we close out this jam-packed episode 207 for February 25th, 2011, we always glance back at the news yet again to give you a wrap-up. As so many things happen, as I try and tell the story of the week for you, that I've joked that when I finish the show, it's as if I'd like to close the book on that week, but of course it never stops, and things continue to boil on, and I'm by no means going to be able to be the fastest or the best or give you the first posts all the time, but I think, I don't know. Former Libya minister urges Gaddafi to resign. Lawmakers continue to jostle on spending. And, of course, the latest paranoia, accused of targeting George W. Bush in New York City. These are the things going on in the New World Order, my friends. And, of course, yes, Charlie Sheen went on the Alex Jones Show yesterday. And now he is in stinky time trouble, my friends. Let's not play the Patriot games. And as my man Richard Grove of TragedyAndHope.com would say, thanks for tuning in and not dropping out. So this has been the 207th episode. It's February 25th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.